is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Maintaining bone strength is complex with no single solution. My patients who want to optimize their bone health have seen remarkable results with LiveMD as part of a comprehensive bone program. LiveMD is a Class 1 medical device cleared by the FDA. It creates a gentle, low-intensity vibration to benefit your musculoskeletal system. It's a safe, scientifically proven, and simple approach to maintaining musculoskeletal health and wellness. It really works, just 10 minutes per day. Go to livemd.us, that's livmd.us, to learn more about how LiveMD may improve your health. That's livmd.us.
Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. And how are you doing, Layla? Well, we're well into fall. Some of that Indian summer weather is behind us. And,
yes.
We're back with more normal temperatures heading
right
towards Thanksgiving.
We can take back out the sweaters and boots we had to briefly put away.
You know, I got faked out because I put away like all my like light stuff.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I didn't have, you know, I had to like kind of pull back out the stuff that I'd already stored away.
Yeah.
With all that warm weather, crazy weather, like what,
I know,
in the 70s?
Oh, yeah, 75 degrees.
Yeah, okay. So, we have questions.
Yes,
and
we do.
Our questions, by the way, for our listeners, send them to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll answer as many questions as we can. So let's, without undue prelude here, let's just get right into answering the questions.
Okay, we've got an email. I don't have a name. Hello, been a fan for years. My husband, 63, was recently put on Flomax after major surgery, where his flow issues became exacerbated due to anesthesia. Well, we read the side effects of Flomax, and it said, tell your doctor if you have glaucoma.
Mm-hmm.
My husband has pigmented
right
glaucoma. It's controlled. So then we checked out Saw Palmetto, and that, too, can worsen glaucoma.
Right. Is it okay? So
what can we take?
There's a confusion there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So Flomax is a medication that maximizes your urinary flow. It does so because it has what's called anticholinergic action. And anticholinergic medications have, as an unfortunate side effect,
mm-hmm,
raising intraocular pressure.
Hmm.
So they are contraindicated when you have glaucoma or increased pressure in your eye. Now, there's some confusion here. And I don't know where this person read this or inferred this. But
mm-hmm,
because saw palmetto seems to work on urinary flow,
mm-hmm,
it is said to have anticholinergic action.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked this up very carefully, and I looked at a variety of websites, and I found that a couple of websites stated that it might have anticholinergic actions,
mm-hmm,
but mostly saw palmetto has a Proscar like effect. Proscar is finasteride. It's the drug that shrinks the prostate.
Mm-hmm.
It's a blocker of the so-called bad testosterone.
Dehydrotestosterone.
Right. DHT.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's DHT blocker. That's the main way it works. It does not normalize urinary flow so much as an anticholinergic. It shouldn't be a problem. I've read some sources that say that saw palmetto's effects might come from alpha blockade like Flomax, but that's not really confirmed. So it's probably safe. Let me see, I'm looking at the side effects. It says saw palmetto is likely safe for most people. Side effects are usually mild. Some people have reported dizziness, headache, nausea, vomiting, constipation, and diarrhea, but that could be
those
with anything.
Those are the usual side effects,
yeah,
of everything.
Of everything, you know, if you look at virtually any drug. Some people have reported that saw palmetto causes impotence. I guess that's slightly plausible because when you take Proscar, that may block DHT, and DHT is a form of testosterone, sometimes has an impact on libido. There's actually,
mm-hmm,
been shown that when you take Proscar, you can have changes in sexual desire or performance. And by inference,
because of its impact on testosterone.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. However, these side effects do not seem to occur any more often with salt palmetto than with a sugar pill. Mm. So, you know, that what they said is a sugar pill can cause all these problems. Dizziness,
wow.
Headache, nausea, vomiting, constipation, and diarrhea.
Placebo.
Yeah. Right. You know, I'm just reading the most rigorous side effect profile on that, and the one thing, I guess it is a concern, salt palmetto is likely unsafe when used during pregnancy or breastfeeding because it has the activity working on the hormones, and this could maybe have an impact during pregnancy.
I don't think the husband has to worry about that.
No, I don't think the husband has to worry about that, but, you know.
Yeah.
So, but women use salt palmetto. They use it for their hair. They use it for their hair because it's a DHT blocker, and it can actually help. To some extent, women have androgenic alopecia, which is related to excess male hormones, and there's a thinning out, especially if you're genetically susceptible in your family. Mm. And salt palmetto may work a little bit for some women. We do have women taking salt palmetto, we have women taking Proscar or finasteride. Not Proscar, it's actually the baldness drug, whose name eludes me for a moment here.
Oh,
For the hair.
Starts with a P, Propecia.
Propecia, thank you, beautiful. You know, it actually shows that together we have a brain. It's called collaborative. It's actually what gets old couples by, you know, like two 92-year-olds.
Uh-huh.
Between them, they have a brain, you know, as long as they don't argue too much.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so that pretty much handles that concern,
right.
I think. All right,
right
so
right.
Let's...
Yes, best of luck with your husband. Hope he feels better soon. All right.
By the way, the herbal medicine par excellence for glaucoma, there is one.
What?
And that is marijuana.
Oh, my goodness. Should I tell my mother?
I don't know about
glaucoma.
Your mother. Right. I'm not sure if your mother would take to marijuana. But, you know, actually, it's proven that marijuana lowers intraocular pressure. And this was discovered as a result of the fact that African Americans, very prone to glaucoma, and especially when they immigrate to the Western Hemisphere, get on a Western diet. It was found that Rastafarians who ritually smoke pot in Jamaica, you know, they smoke the pot in these big spliffs like funnels, and they have their hair, you know, long braided hair.
Bob Marley.
Yeah, Bob Marley. And they have a much lower incidence of glaucoma than the rest of the population of Jamaica,
and they've narrowed that down to the marijuana, something else.
Really is the marijuana that does lower. So, you know, medicinal marijuana. Actually, medicinal marijuana is sometimes used for painful glaucoma that's really poorly controlled. I mean, the nerves in the eyes are such that when the pressure reaches a certain point, it's excruciatingly painful. So, marijuana can actually alleviate that. I don't think we're there yet with these people. Your mom's fine. She can use the eye drops.
That's it.
Okay.
Okay, our next question comes from Adrienne. She asks, is it good to take lysine and arginine for severe osteoporosis?
Some formulas, this is a little esoteric, some formulas call for lysine. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure arginine, but lysine is a constituent. See, lysine is an amino acid that you find in collagen. I'm not sure that arginine is, but I include, by the way, in my osteosupport, I do recall now, I include lysine, but not arginine.
I see, okay.
Lysine has, there's some bona fides for lysine in terms of collagen synthesis, because collagen is actually made of just a few amino acids, unlike the muscles of other organs, the cells of your other organs, or... your muscles, they may have a broad blend of amino acids, particularly branched chain amino acids.
Yeah.
Collagen has been sold as a you know, cheap collagen used to be part of these protein drinks, very inexpensive to produce, but dangerous because it was incomplete amino acid profile. It did not provide all 8 or 9 essential amino acids.
Wow.
Not enough branch chains, but it did have lysine and I believe glycine, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure which are, you know, I'd have to look up the constituents of collagen.
Okay.
But yeah, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
Not so much arginine.
Not so much arginine. But arginine is good for other things like nitric oxide, blood pressure.
Yeah.
Possibly erectile dysfunction, all of those things. And it's actually an essential amino acid for babies. There's 10 essential amino acids when you're a baby, but there's 9 as you get older.
Okay.
And arginine is the one that's missing.
Oh, really?
As
okay.
you get older. The, that was like 101 that just came back into my head, nutrition 101. Okay. We have another question from Adrian. What are the best tests for leaky gut? We like our intestinal permeability test.
Right. Why don't you describe that?
I believe it's a urine-based test
right.
that can show if there's intestinal permeability.
Right. What it involves is you take a challenge of a drink, and the drink contains two sugars.
Lactulose
and mannitol. Mm. And lactulose is a large sugar, and because it's large, it should not pass through the gut. It should actually pass out. So it should not appear in the urine to a high degree.
Used for laxative purposes,
it is a laxative.
Too.
That's why. That's it kind of stays the intestine. It creates an osmotic diarrhea by virtue of its staying in the intestine, not being absorbed. Mannitol, on the other hand, should be absorbed. So when you take a ratio of those two, what you will find is it's an index that shows A, you're not absorbing the things you should, and B, you're absorbing the things you shouldn't, hence your gut is leaky.
Huh.
Now, there are other tests for leaky gut that are said to be more precise, and I'm not exactly familiar with the methodology, but they use tracers to see where tagged, basically, food molecules get, you know, either get absorbed or don't get absorbed or come out in the urine. You know, I'm not exactly sure what the methodology is there. But that's the test we use.
Yeah.
And it's not entirely accurate. It's not entirely accurate. You know, there's also tests to see if there's zonulin, you know, where the tight junctions are correct. You know, that's,
Zonulin is the target, actually.
Yeah.
The other thing is patients will often present with the leaky gut when there's enough presentation of it. Oftentimes we don't even have to rely on a test as much.
Here's what, sometimes if we see a person is allergic to everything, it suggests that that their gut is so permeable that their
chemical
system,
sensitivities, everything.
Their system is seeing everything, you know, and it's not like, well, okay, eliminate apples and eliminate fish, chicken, poultry, eggs,
nothing left
wheat,
to eat,
dairy, you know, then you must have a leaky gut.
Yeah.
And so the answer is not to get off of everything in the world, it's to
repair the gut. And we repair the gut with glutamine, we clean up the diet, we remove any offending food allergens, we provide probiotics to reinoculate the gut with healthy bacteria because a nourished microbiome is critical for that. And we look for gluten sensitivity as well.
Gluten sensitivity might be the key because people have leaky gut on the basis of food intolerances.
Yeah.
And that is one that's really a trigger. Sometimes we get rid of the gluten and the leaky gut resolves.
Yes, and all those food reactions resolve as well. Candida can cause a leaky gut. If you've been on a round of antibiotics or anything like that, that could possibly contribute to as well.
Out of interest, this little factoid is that when you test people who are the primary relatives of patients with ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, that would be a father, mother, brother, sister, son, or daughter, there's a high prevalence of leaky gut, even if they don't have the colitis.
Wow.
So it suggests that there's some genetic component that predisposes to
Interesting.
This.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah, I've heard it said that many autoimmune conditions start with a leaky gut.
Oh, yeah. No, this has revolutionized our understanding of autoimmunity, is that the gut is a gateway to the systemic circulation. And when there's improper sequestration of bad things that they stay in the gut. You know, it's like there's a phrase coined by Alessio Fasano, who is the author of some great books on gluten. He's one of the world's leading researchers on celiac disease and gluten intolerance.
Yes.
And he said, the gut is not like Las Vegas. What happens in the gut doesn't stay in the gut. Okay? So epitomizes that.
Yeah. All right. We have another question, actually, from Adrian. What are the best tests for the adrenals? That would be our salivary cortisol test.
Yes, that's a good one.
Which is much better than a blood test, don't you think?
Yes, it is. Because the blood test that is used by conventional doctors is what's called an ACTH challenge test. And it is done in the morning when cortisol is highest. Sometimes you could just do a morning cortisol blood test, but it doesn't tell you what's happening during the rest of the day. But fasting cortisol, okay, fine. But then you want to actually see the response of your adrenals to ACTH, which is the signaling molecule that makes your adrenals churn out cortisol. And so how that goes is that if you have, let's see how that goes. If you have an exaggerated response to ACTH, then it's, you need more.
You need
cortisol support.
Okay.
So that's generally that the way that works. And that's used as a conventional means of... I take it back. In Addison's disease, which is a failure... I'm trying to get this... This like I'm going to go back to med school here. If your adrenals fail in Addison's disease, then the ACTH, it's like beating a dead horse. It's like you could inject ACTH, you get a no response, a poor response from your adrenals. Okay, the ACTH should signal to your adrenals. Your adrenals have enough reserve to show a strong response to ACTH. Okay, so that's how that test might work.
Interesting. But the salivary cortisol test is better because you're taking it at four different times.
Take it four different times, you have a better idea of how, and it's also better for spotting subtle adrenal insufficiency. Now, keep in mind the adrenals make a lot of things. The adrenals, the cortex makes DHEA, and it also makes pregnenolone, and it also and it makes the cortisol.
Yeah,
cortisol from the cortex. That's the outside. The inside is the medulla, and the medulla makes epinephrine and dopamine and norepinephrine. Those are more neurotransmitters. They actually affect blood pressure. They affect heart rate and so on. So depends on where what you're talking about. I mean,
Adrenals are very important.
Yeah,
the two little glands that sit on top of our kidneys, when they're called in for stress response, if you're not managing your blood sugar, if you have unstable blood sugar, the adrenals are called in too often. And so, and we see so much presentation of weak adrenals or adrenal burnout from people who don't manage their lives very well and have very erratic eating times or have blood sugar issues. Or
we see two forms of adrenal stress, too high. And by the way, a high morning cortisol is highly correlated with depression.
They wake up too early
in a sweat with anxiety.
Yeah,
that's very much the physiology of depression, is this adrenal overdrive. And then in adrenal burnout, you're not making enough and you have you would have low blood pressure. You would have difficulty responding to stress, a lot of allergies, more inflammation because your cortisol is your natural tamper downer of inflammation.
And those people feel worse after exercise rather than rejuvenated. So that's another clue.
Right.
Thank you for your questions, Adrian. Okay. All right, we've got...
In fact, there's a new name for chronic fatigue syndrome. I think it's something like SEIS. I don't know if it's going to take... Or SEID. It's Systemic Exercise Intolerance Disorder, SEID.
Wow.
They're trying to change the terminology because calling it chronic fatigue syndrome, they feel trivializes it.
I see.
Because it's more than just fatigue. It's like... And it one of the... common denominators of chronic fatigue syndrome is people, instead of feeling better with exercise, like some mornings I feel like, I don't want to really work out. It's like, oh, well, I'll feel better. Okay, let me go to the gym, and put one foot in front of the other, put my sneakers on. And I go and then I come back and I feel good. I feel energized. I feel, it clears my head. I'm awake. It's much better than a cup of coffee. But people who have chronic fatigue syndrome or adrenal impairment, they feel hammered from exercise.
Yes.
They just... Do not
They're wiped
feel
out.
That. Yeah.
They're wiped out.
In fact, they feel sick, actually, from exercise.
Wow. Okay. We've got a question from Richard, who says, I get this particular canned sauerkraut or even the sauerkraut in the bag. And the first step is to rinse it and drain it. Yes, it will remove some of the sodium content, but won't it also remove a significant amount of probiotics? And does the liquid contain enough probiotics to compensate for the salt, sodium benzoate, and sodium bisulfite that are listed in the ingredients? Richard, this is not the sauerkraut to get.
Right.
Let's talk about the sauerkraut
dead,
to get.
Dead sauerkraut.
It's dead sauerkraut. And especially sodium benzoate is a known carcinogen. You don't want this preservative anywhere in your food.
I get blown away from sodium benzoate. I feel weird from sodium benzoate. Yeah.
You get some kind of reaction to it.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is get the good quality in a jar, in a glass jar of sauerkraut, where the only ingredients are cabbage and salt, or fermented cabbage and salt. And that's it. There should be no preservative there at all.
It says we may say live cultures or preservative-free.
Yes. And generally, you'll see this in more of a European market
and
or something.
It's refrigerated.
It's
refrigerated.
Yeah. It could be from Hungary or Poland or Germany.
Well,
or somewhere.
Health food stores now have it.
Yes, they do.
Health food stores carry it. Yeah.
So that's actually the sauerkraut you want to get, not the one that's full of preservatives.
Right.
That would render it not very good. Okay.
Right, but let's say hypothetically, this when he started out, that's what I thought he was saying, is that he was getting the good kind.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say hypothetically you get the good kind, but you don't want all that salt.
Right.
Okay, so what if you rinse that?
Mm.
Is that going to diminish its the ability of that to impart good bacteria to you?
Well, if you rinse it in very hot or boiling water, probably.
Yeah. Yes.
Cold water, I'm not so sure.
I agree with you. I think that the bacteria adhere to the cabbage.
Mm, mm-hmm.
They're pretty like tightly bound. Now, you might rinse away some of them, but I suspect that some or a fairly high percentage are adherent to the surface of the cabbage, and it's still good.
Yeah.
It's still good.
Yeah. And by the way, for those of you who are having the sauerkraut on your hot dog, you don't necessarily want to heat up that sauerkraut too much. Maybe bring it to room temperature
or something. So if you
don't want to heat it and cook it.
In other words, if you nuke your bratwurst. If you nuke your hot dog and you put the sauerkraut on it, because you don't want hot hot dog and cold sauerkraut, right? That's not a good combo.
You know what? The first time I used a microwave, when microwaves first came out, I put a hot dog in there for about 4 minutes and I watched it explode.
Oh,
I had no idea.
Yeah, no.
But this when you said hot dog and microwave,
you got to watch out with you because sometimes I'm getting impatient and I don't usually what I do in a microwave. You have to cover these things.
Yes, you do.
But one of the worst things to do is cover it with like Saran wrap.
Oh,
because you're going to melt this like toxic
plastic. Never put
plastic
in there. Never put plastic.
So you know I'll put something in a glass dish and I want to warm it up, but heat from the inside, so you will splatter all over. Then you have to like clean the whole microwave.
Forget about
it. I cover it with wax paper.
Wax paper is an excellent idea.
And
better than a paper towel, which you don't necessarily want.
Paper towel, you know, could have some chemicals, but you know, wax paper, I think, is pretty clean and natural.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't so much melt the wax into the food.
Mm-hmm.
That's a preferable alternative.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's actually harder to find wax paper because it's. You know, fewer people are using wax paper.
I use wax paper instead of plastic Ziploc bags.
Or you can use
like
parchment
that.
Paper.
Parchment is wonderful.
Parchment is even better because it doesn't even have any chemical coating. It doesn't just parchment paper.
Right.
It's designed to cook with.
Mm-hmm.
So
you
can just...
When we make spicy chicken wings, it goes on the parchment. Otherwise, I don't want to scrub all that.
Okay.
Or something. You know.
Now that we've given people some culinary tips, we're out of time in part one of today's Intelligent Medicine podcast. So... What we suggest you do is please turn the record over to side two or advance to part two.
Uh-huh.
That dates me a little bit. And we'll then talk about some additional questions and give us a preview of what we're going to tackle in part two.
My husband has swollen ankles and feet with no other obvious symptoms. What's happening here?
Okay, we're going to tackle swollen ankles and feet. In part two of today's Intelligent Medicine podcast, I'm here today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, who, of course, is available for consultation. The advantage when you see her is that you needn't come directly to the Hoffman Center here in New York City. She also will work with patients long distance, and as long as you're under some kind of medical supervision. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor and you can come and see Layla. It's an economical way to avail yourself of the services of the Hoffman Center. All right, part two coming up. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.